Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express out Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. So we do, again, the latest reporting from Farhan Lalji is that he's told it's a knee issue for Thatcher Demko, not a groin issue. So, we'll keep going with Groin Watch, but maybe we'll stop short of renaming the show Groin Talk.
We should note, though, that reportedly it's not his groin.
Yes, it's his knee. Yeah.
Reportedly.
Per Farhan Lalji.
For today, it's reportedly his knee. Tomorrow, it will be a lower body injury. And that's the sort of emotional run you can expect with Groin Watch 2024.
We'll get a timeline, and then we can really start projecting. Okay, when does he get back? How much runway does he need before the playoffs? All of that.
Although the Canucks haven't really been doing timelines.
That's week true. To week. A lot of week to week.
Oh, they actually, do week
actually,
to week.
Is that what the smart money would be on?
Yes,
week to week.
Lower
You're
body.
You're probably
week to
right.
Week. Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah, well, so the Canucks, again, they practice
based on
tomorrow,
no inside info, just
so
based on feeling.
We'll, unless we get a Twitter announcement or something tonight, we'll likely get an update tomorrow on Thatcher Demko's status. So, look, I mean, I think our overriding theme on this one is going to be it's really hard to say what exactly this means until we know more, right? Until we get further reporting, until we get further details, more of a timeline, which, again, we might not get. Like, we probably won't get a lot of details from the team. We might get some more reporting from it, but it won't be directly from the team. It's really hard to say what this one is going to mean. What do you make of the fact that it doesn't, again, if it is his knee, not his groin, that it appears to be a new injury as opposed to something, you know, a re-injury of a past issue? Like, because I've seen people celebrating that fact, which I suppose I can understand, but it's also, I mean, it's still an injury. He's still on the shelf. I don't know if it makes that much difference in terms of projecting what he's going to do when he comes back, which is really the key here, right? Like, whatever the injury is, all that matters fundamentally is how good is he, how close to peak Thatcher Demko is he once the playoffs roll around. And I'm not sure the new versus old injury really affects that.
I don't know if it does, because I don't know what the nature of the injury is, but I think you make a good point. Like, that sounds good, but it's not necessarily good. I think for me, there's like a couple. So the global takeaway, the big global takeaway is, you know, and we've talked about this a lot. We talked about it a lot in the offseason. We've talked about it a lot over the course of the season. Like, the only thing that Demko has left to prove in this league, right? I mean, aside from like winning a Stanley Cup or like some of those things that are outside the individual control of a player, and that I think if your standard is, well, if they don't win a cup, they're a loser or whatever, I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, like that, I'm not here for those types of hockey conversations. So short of that, like, you know, classic Skip Bayless morality play as wins and losses in professional sports side of it, like, we know that Thatcher Demko is one of the best puck-stopping human beings on the planet, right? Like, we know that in any given game the Canucks step on the ice with Demko, they've got a chance to win that evening.
By the way, I just want to point out that Rick Dhaliwal also reporting that it's the knee as well. I just saw on Twitter. Okay. So both Farhan and Rick reporting knee injury for Thatcher Demko.
And not the weenie.
Not the weenie, no.
So we know that Demko's incredible. The only thing we've never seen from him is hold down a workhorse starter's workload and be healthy throughout the season, right? We're talking about a goalie who, you know, comes into the league and 19-20, he's a backup to Jacob Markstrom, used heavily. Markstrom gets hurt, Demko's thrust into the spotlight. Markstrom gets hurt in the bubble, Demko's thrust in the spotlight. There were some hiccups when he was first thrust in the spotlight after the Markstrom injury. In the regular season, there was nothing of the sort in the playoffs.
Absolutely not.
As Demko built a legend and then sort of had to like outgrow that legend, the bubble Demko legend almost became like a weight on him. Like, he was asked about it all the time and he clearly hated it. Fair enough. Next year, he outduels Braden Holtby. Canucks end up buying Holtby out. Demko's ensconced as the starter. And then the next year, the Bruce There It Is run is like built on the back of Demko just being on an outrageous heater for a couple of months, especially. But he gets hurt, right? 64 games. It's his career high in games played. Given this injury, it's likely that it'll remain his...
I would think absolutely. They only have 16 games left.
And then he wasn't really like 100% even to begin the next season, struggled massively, got hurt again, plays 32 games and really only finds his form after he returns to action following the Tocchet hire behind a sturdier defensive team.
Yep.
Right? And now this year he's been electric, right? This is the best season of his career. Statistically, for much of the first 2 months of the season, as the club sort of found a different gear. I mean, if Demko had just been average in the first 2 months of the season, this team would not have gotten off to hashtag the start by any means. You know, like him and PP1 were the most important engines for the club in the first 6 weeks of the year. He was unbelievable. And then he continued to play at an outrageous clip, not quite that level of outrageousness, because that's not sustainable in a league this difficult.
Mm-hmm.
To quote Travis Green, welcome back to the league. Now, you know, this might be a minor ailment, but it doesn't change the fact that, like, from the availability perspective, 6 weeks out from the start of the playoffs, there's some uncertainty around Demko again. He's having started 49 games, including 14 in 34 days between the end of the All-Star break and when he left that Jets game. Just something to monitor, especially because this team has played a little fast and loose, partly because of the cap situation.
Well, that's in a tough cap situation, they have made the conscious decision to
roll the
look
dice
at it and say, look, our overall goalie commitment is going to be extremely low.
Extremely low.
Because we have Thatcher Demko at $5 million, and then we're going to bargain hunt for the backup goalie.
Spencer Martin on a one-way deal. Yep. Trade a draft pick for Casey DeSmith, see if we can rehabilitate his value. The club's cap situation is going to be crunchy again this summer, probably, depending on how things play out with Hronek. And, you know, I wonder if the Canucks really need to think about spending on another backup, given that, you know, Demko's going to be entering his age 28. He'll turn 29 next season. And we've just never seen him do 60-plus games healthy all year. At some point, if you're continuing to count on that, like, don't you need to see it?
And especially, I will say, one, because you're only paying him $5 million, right? So it's not as if you're looking at this and saying, oh, man, we're paying this guy $9 million, and now we have to go out and spend on a backup, and now all of a sudden your overall spend at the goalie position is, $12 million or something like that. You can pay a little bit for a backup, pending what happens with the rest of your salary cap situation, and I think still feel really good about what you're spending at the goalie position, considering how cheap Thatcher Demko's deal is. I think the other consideration with getting maybe spending a little bit more investing in a better backup going forward is that not only does it provide some insurance if Thatcher Demko is injured, but it might also finally give the organization the confidence to limit Demko's usage a little bit, right? Because the interesting thing, and I thought coming into the year, okay, they went out and traded for DeSmith. If you can get off to a good start and put yourself solidly in the playoff mix, you should be able to reduce Thatcher Demko's usage. They far surpassed that. They've been in first place in the league, first place in their division for a lot of the year, and they've still used Thatcher Demko a lot, right? And I don't know if that just speaks to a lack of confidence in Casey DeSmith. I don't know what the underlying reason is there, but you do want to get to a point where you feel where 50 to 55 isn't a pipe dream. You know what I mean? Like that, given what we know about Thatcher Demko's career, given what we've seen, I think you need to create that kind of environment for your team.
Well, especially because it's not a negative. This might just be bad luck, right? Like there might not be any reason for it, but we know for sure that Demko has the ability to be like one of the best sprinters in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he gets hot the way he did to open this season for a 6 week stretch in the spring in one of the next 3 years, this team's going to be hard to beat.
Oh yeah.
In terms of making a run deep into the playoffs. And maybe it's this year, right? I don't think whatever has transpired over the last 48 hours takes that off the table by any means. But like, we know that he's an elite. He has the ability to be an elite sprinter. We just don't know that he has the ability to be an elite, set it and forget it. You're getting 60 games of league average play and he's going to be healthy come playoff time. Like, you don't know that. So I don't see why you wouldn't lean into what you know.
That's an extraordinarily high bar, right? You know what I mean? Like what you're saying, 60 plus every year of good goaltending and staying healthy is like how many guys? Hellebuck,
right? Well, this because Shesterkin fell off this year.
Yes, Shesterkin.
Sorokin's
been great. Vasilevskiy was injured, but he's played so much hockey.
Yeah.
You know, Ottinger.
No, I don't think we know. Awful this year.
He's been awful. Like,
Ottinger's been bad this year.
So, I mean, that's an. I think it's important to keep in mind that. It's not slamming Demko or anything to say that.
By no means.
It just means he's not Connor Hellebuck. But, in terms of that reliability year in, year out.
But it is worth contextualizing given like the hotness of how this market has discussed and debated, say, Roberto Luongo and failed to appreciate how wild it is to have a guy who does it year after year.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You're right. It's an outrageous bar.
Yeah. And you know? Again, I think it's just
why,
kind of
which is why if a guy does it for 8 years, you should retire his number.
I think it's... I'm impressed that you found a way to get it back there.
Easily.
I think it's just you just it's just
break,
something
didn't even break a sweat.
It's just something you have to account for in your team building going forward, right? That you're like, all right, this is a thing that we have to manage and we have to build in some risk management, some insurance around Thatcher Demko and how we're using him.
Yeah, and then here's the other thing. So I know you're not watching Dynasty, the Patriots documentary that I'm completely obsessed with at the moment, by the way, and highly recommend to everyone. Although I do also recommend watching it with a grain of salt and ignoring the assassination of Bill Belichick for what I see as no good reason. Anyway, they do this thing where they go through the 18-1 season, right? The season where they lose to the Giants in the Super Bowl. And they kind of yada yada game 16 of that campaign, which fatefully is against the New York Giants, mm-hmm. who've already locked up the NFC North,
mm-hmm.
or no, the NFC East,
yeah,
and have nothing to play for. Facing a 15-0 Patriots team that probably is hoping like, hey, like if they don't play their starters, we, you know, you get a couple series, Brady, you come out, and these are huge calls for coaches. I mean, you think about the like fate alters for some coaches who like play their starters in a meaningless game to end the regular season. One of the guys gets hurt, you know, Brandon Staley with Mike Williams, right? And then you get a comeback defeat at the hands of the Jaguars. Next year, you're out of a job. I mean, fates hang in the balance here. And Tom Coughlin, the Giants coach at the time, in a meaningless game says, this is for history. Like, this is for history. We're not going to, like, lie down and let a team go undefeated in the regular season. Mm-hmm. No way, no how. And they play them close. Brady has to pull it out late. They win by 3. And you know that matters in terms of the Giants feeling like they had a shot as double-digit underdogs once the two teams met again in the Super Bowl. I bring this up because... there's going to be a lot of second guessing about Demko starting 14 games in 34 after the All-Star break, especially. And, you know, I don't know, like, I don't think the backseat driving is fair in this instance for a couple of reasons. But one of them is that Coughlin decision. Like, go look at all the best in the West type opponents or yeah. best in the league type opponents that the Canucks have faced. Like, I don't know that having a win in those games. Like, I don't know what the value is of having beaten LA, Vegas, Winnipeg consecutively for like the mental state of the team that might pay off in 10 weeks when they happen to bump into that club versus if they'd like, we never beat this team in the regular season. Like those small margins,
mm-hmm.
small psychological intangible margins. Like, I don't know whether or not those matter or not. And I think you got to leave that to a guy like Tockett, as opposed to thinking you've got the answer, in my view anyway. The second thing is Demko's usage post All-Star breaks, like very much within the herd, right? Like he started the most games of any goalie since the All-Star break, but not by a ton. Like Hellebuck started 12. That's another team that's been like at the top of their yep. division, pretty safe, not a ton to, you know, worry about. There's a lot of goalies who've been at 10 or 12. Like this is not outlier usage for Demko since the All-Star break. And I mean, that's all you can do. Like, so long as you're using him in a way that approximates what the rest of the league is doing, I don't think we should look at it as problematic or something, you know, like it was down the stretch last season where the way that the club was using Miller, Hughes, Demko was like completely out of line with every other team in a similar circumstance. Like this is well within the herd, well within reason in my mind. So I'm not really here for the second guessing about the usage. I think Demko is a guy who probably does want to be a workhorse starter. I think the organization and Ennie and Clark, clearly having worked with Luongo and Bobrovsky, like, believes in this, right? I think Rick Tocchet believes in this. So, you know, I don't have a, I think there's going to be a lot of backseat driving about how hard Demko's been ridden since the All-Star break in the wake of this. And I don't really think that's fair, or that there's like reasonable cause for that particular line of criticism.
That's a good way of looking at it, I think. All right, into the inbox, 650, 650. Tommy B texts in, it'll be interesting to see how good Tocchet's coaching is without Demko. And somebody else texted in earlier, which is more impressive, their more recent defensive dominance or the New York's road trip offensive dynamite? And I read those two together because I think the Canucks, we mentioned this earlier, I think the Canucks are going to do just fine with Casey DeSmith and, you know, maybe an Archer Seelov start sprinkled in there. You and I have talked about how good this team has become 5-on-5 defensively, but I was looking at the stats today and I actually don't know that even on this show we've kind of hammered it home enough just how good at even strength this team has become defensively since January 1st. Basically, any underlying number, any underlying measure of 5-on-5 defense you want to look at, it's Carolina 1, Vancouver 2nd. And Carolina has been phenomenal in the new year. So that is very, very good company. But whether it's shot attempts, scoring chances, expected goals, whatever it is, whatever measure you want to use to determine how much teams are giving up at 5-on-5, the Canucks have been 2nd in the league since January 1st. Now, early in the year, they were a fine defensive team. If you look at those same metrics from like October to the end of December, they're kind of in that 10 to 15 range, but they've found a completely different gear since the new year. And so to me, that is the most impressive thing that's happened for this team over the last couple of months, is that they've gone from a good defensive team to a legitimately elite team around the league. I think it's been, I don't want to say ignored necessarily, because people know they're playing really well defensively right now, but there's just been a lot else going on. So I don't think we've necessarily appreciated just how good it's gotten since the turn of the calendar. But, you know, if you're looking for reasons to be confident in what this team will do with Thatcher Demko out, I mean, obviously, that's a huge one. I'd also say, if you're looking for reasons to be confident in this team going into the playoffs, if you're looking for kind of team-wide indicators that this is a legitimate contender, if you're first or second in the league in 5-on-5 defense, that's an incredible strength. Now, As you said, look, I'm using the caveat of 5-on-5 here. I'm not just saying elite defensively because of the penalty kill, right? You have to have other things going for you as well. But, you know, you and I have tended to talk about it as kind of, they have all these overlapping contributing factors, right? Their star power, their goaltending, their 5-on-5 defense, their forward depth. I think we need to elevate how we look at them 5-on-5 defensively out of that mix to one of the, like, I might call it the defining characteristic of this team. If you're looking to, like, define the identity of the Vancouver Canucks, I think we know it now. It's an elite 5-on-5 defensive team, which, I mean, when was the last time we were able to say that, first of all? But it bodes well. Not that there's not going to be any drop off. Look, you lose Thatcher Demko, that's a tough situation to be in, but make no mistake about it, this team has been phenomenal defensively since January 1st.
Really remarkable. Like, they've been absolutely killing it. Which is, you know, again, sort of why my focus has remained on the offense.
Yeah.
You know, like, that to me has been the bigger concern. Against the Jets, they were able to break through early, and that's sort of one of the things that's interesting about this Canucks team, is if they're able to get the first goal, and they usually have,
mm-hmm.
right? They're actually, I think, really good at attacking against the grain against a pressing team. That's like one of the things that this team is best at. Where I get a little concerned is what it looks like sometimes when they fall behind.
Especially against other really good defensive teams. Like, that was the story of the first LA game to me.
For sure.
It was like, as soon as LA was up, it's like, oh boy, this is trouble.
Well, because they're comfortable doing the same.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and even over this little mini win streak, right? Other than the fact that Aiden Hill was spraying rebounds all over the ice and the Canucks finally were able to convert on one, right? To end that second period and effectively give themselves cushion, like, until the Jets game, the scoring has been hard to come by, really hard to come by. And I look at this, we've talked a lot about Hughes on, Hughes off. Canucks have played 1,235 minutes, 5-on-5, with Quinn Hughes on the ice, 79 goals for in that time. They've played 1,926 minutes without Quinn Hughes on the ice, 5-on-5 this season, 80 goals. Roughly equal in 700 more minutes.
Yeah, in like 50% again of the minutes, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. An additional 11 games to score as much as they've scored with Quinn Hughes on the ice. 12 games. Ludicrous stuff from the Canucks' best defenseman. And that, to me, like, this team's defense at this point, I think you can take to the bank as something that is a signature strength of this team.
Yeah.
Right? When Demko's healthy, goaltending, I think, can go in there. You hope that the power play can get back to a level. Because if they can add that to the mix, then we're really cooking.
That's the thing, right? That's that one ingredient, which shouldn't be impossible. You know what I mean? There's every world. It's not as if there's like a structural, oh man, I don't know if they're ever going to be able to put a good power play together. Like, they have the pieces. We've seen it.
Given the talent level on this team, it's like, yeah, three guys who are going to challenge for 100 points. Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, that's like the one thing now, because you talk about the great defense, goaltending, asterisk now with Thatcher Demko. Yep. But if you have those two things and then you add like one really cooking special teams unit,
yeah,
then you're getting somewhere.
Well, and although the special teams unit thing also is limited in utility as you get deeper in every playoff series, mm-hmm. which is why the 5-on-5 offensive side, you know, like, you got to be able to manufacture good looks in the Stanley Cup playoffs, or you can quickly become dead in the water. And this is sort of where my concern stems from, is those non-Hughes minutes. Can they find ways to get some support, just enough supporting offense from those non-Hughes minutes, is sort of the only big question that I have remaining around this team, aside from, you know,
Thatcher Demko's status.
Aside from pretty, Groinwatch 2024.
Pretty significant one. We'll continue Groinwatch up next with Kevin Woodley from NHL.com, In Goal Magazine. Really, really excited to get Woodley's insight on everything happening around Thatcher Demko and the Canucks. That is next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. We now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline, where we are joined from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. He's a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. He is Kevin Woodley. Woodley, can't think of a better guest to have on the show today, given everything that's going on with Thatcher Demko. How are you?
Whatever will we talk about
today?
I
know. What are we going to find to talk about? Who knows? All right, so there's so much to unpack here with Thatcher Demko, where they go, his usage, all of that, who they call up. Just what did you see from him on Saturday, from the morning skate through the game to him eventually pulling himself out? Did anything stand out to you in terms of what to be concerned of, what might have happened? Like, just your perspective on how Saturday unfolded for Thatcher Demko.
You know, I think at the end of the day, there's a certain amount of guesswork for anyone.
Yeah.
Because of the unique timing of it. And because I went to the Jets room instead of the Canucks, just the nature of not being able to be in both rooms, thanks to the renovations, we split them. I wasn't even there because my follow-up, when Casey DeSmith said that he had been given a heads up, I would like to have known when, like, because that sort of gives you an
right.
idea of, you know, are we talking about something that happened in the first period? You know, I thought Hockey Night, you know, isolated a play that it certainly showed as though he was a little hesitant getting up from, or a little slow to get up from, and that's the save on Namestnikov, and he's in what the Canucks goaltending department would call a reverse track. The rest of the league kind of refers to it more commonly as a double seal, and that's where you're basically in the butterfly when the puck's behind the net, and you have a skate on each post. And frankly, it's tough. It's a position that puts a lot of stress on the body. There are goaltenders in the National Hockey League that can't get into that position. Even amongst the group that is, you know, tall enough and long enough in the legs to actually get a skate on each post and go 6 feet across in a butterfly. It's just physically demanding position. And so typically you move out of that one side to the other or push out into a save. And the fact that he had to make a save from it because of that coverage breakdown and the bang bang nature of that play, like you're reacting in an anchored position with basically maximum pressure and torsion on the knees, the groins, the hips, right? Like, and so to have to react up to a shot from that is, you know, it makes sense to me. It was smart of Kelly and the Hockey Night crew to sort of isolate that one, identify it, and you see sort of the slowness getting up. So would I be surprised if that was it? Absolutely not. Can I say that it was? Absolutely not. Like a lot of people, I don't have the full information, and I'm, like I said, I'm not going to pretend that I know what happened, but that one definitely would make sense as sort of something to key back on.
We now sort of enter, more than anything, Kevin, just a little bit of like an air of uncertainty around goaltenders, right? Or around Canucks goaltending, because it's not even about the timeline so much as any performance impacts once he returns, given the stakes of the season. Do you kind of see it the same way?
Yeah, I mean, there's a disappointment because obviously you're losing a Vezina
caliber
candidate guy who was, frankly, in my mind, in this last week or so, looked like the guy we saw the first 6 weeks.
Yeah,
right. Like this, to me, he was sort of finding that form. And that had been my answer to everything for kind of ever since the first 6 weeks. And once we got to the point around Christmas where you knew this was a playoff team, it was, so your job is A, to sort of try and finish as high, you know, obviously avoid the 2-3 in the Pacific if you can, but then B, to make sure you got him to that level and sort of helped him stay healthy and maintain it through the playoffs. And so obviously now you have question marks surrounding that, depending on the timeline of the injury, depending on the nature of the injury. If it is indeed, as some have reported, a knee, you know, I mean, but we don't have to look too far back, right? Like Brian Miller, right? Late in the season, leaves to a knee injury, comes back, eventually plays ahead of Eddie Lack, I think, in that Calgary series. But because, and a lot of
the injuries...
He couldn't
move post to post, right, Woodley?
Well, I mean, a knee injury, like, find me a goalie that doesn't have little tears in his MCL.
Sure.
And I'll find you a goalie with a really narrow butterfly that doesn't play at a competitive level. Like, there's just so much stress on the MCL as a ligament. And I'm not saying that's what it is for Thatcher. I'm saying if that's it, you know, I'll never forget. Miller comes back and plays, but the difference between being cleared to play and actually being healthy, you know, for him it was mid-summer, late July. I remember when he came back in August and being on the ice with him and Alex Auld out in Richmond and him telling me that, yeah, like that was... You can come back from it and be cleared, but you're not actually back completely until months later from an MCL. And so the fact that this seems to be, you know, at least again, the reporting and Farhan and Rick Dhaliwal and the guys that are the true insiders that are on top of this, you know, if it is shorter term, I mean, most MCL injuries are 4 to 6, right? So gives you hope that maybe this is something else and something less serious. And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, on the other leg, other side, I believe 2 years ago required, you know, a procedure on his knee. So, it's just at the end of the day, like as much as I'd love to come in here and tell you concretely, he'll be fine. Everything will be great. Like there's plenty of time and there's still optimism that there is. I just don't know because we don't know the details and I'm not sure we will. Like I'm fully expecting to go to practice and get the week to week upgrade tomorrow. Right. That's the MO. And to a certain degree, understandable, although I would argue leaving it these past 2 days just increases, and believe me, because my text message, as you guys would call it, inbox is full, increases the sleuthing. But I don't know that we're ever, or at least not until we get into the offseason, going to have a true idea of where he's at physically. And as much as the hopes is he's back to 100%, I'm not sure we'll ever get to know.
beyond the specifics of the injury and that and how that, because again, we don't know, right? Everyone wants to be very, very clear. We don't know. But beyond the specifics of whatever the injury might be and how that injury might affect, you know, how he moves, all of those things when he comes back, what about just the, like, a rust issue in general getting back for the playoffs, right? I mean, we heard from Rick Dhaliwal, you know, maybe a month, less than a month. That could leave about five games left on the schedule. But for goalies, how quick are you able to kind of come back from being on the shelf and just, you know, get back into that groove that, as you said, we started to see Thatcher Demko kind of getting in here in this last week?
Well, I think there'd be a buildup, obviously, in practice and with Ian Clark. And one of the things you get out of Ian Clark is drills that get their foundation reset, right? Like, he knows how to get a goalie ready to play. From an optimist standpoint, if you want to look at it that way, look at the start of the season Thatcher Demko had, right? Look at how many, and I don't remember off the top of my head, I should have prepped this, but like, it's not like he played a ton of preseason games, right? Like, he didn't need a whole bunch of live action, real action, live fire to sort of find his game. He was their best player out of the gate. The best part of his season, the reason he got into that Vezina conversation, was he basically lapped the field for the first 6 weeks of the season. And so if you're able to get back and able to get even just a couple of games under your belt and feel comfortable, that's the bigger thing. Like, timing in terms of dealing with the pace of play and the level of attack and all the reads that come with having to play at the NHL level is one thing. Having faith in your body and its ability to sort of do what you need it to do and trust it'll do it without feeling like you need to protect it, which is something I think we saw in his game that ultimately led to the injury at the start of last season, sort of protecting an old injury. As long as you can get a couple games and feel good about both those things, they're just like the start of the season. There's no reason to believe you can't get, you know, quote unquote Vezina level Demko back for the playoffs. And I think that's where, you know, if there's optimism from the people in the organization that are sort of sharing timelines with the insiders, I back it. I get it. If you feel like you can get him a couple of games, it's not like a goalie needs, you know, three straight weeks of playing to feel good about his game. Otherwise, they'd ask for more starts in the preseason, and they don't.
Yeah. Kevin, off mic, we had a good chat on Friday about Demko as a workhorse starter, right? And the fact that we hadn't seen it yet. Does this look to you like a bad luck thing, or, you know, a goaltender who next year will turn 29 during the season and has yet to do the play a workhorse 1A workload over the course of a full season and be healthy throughout and above average? Like, at what point do we have to wonder whether or not he's a sprinter or like a perfect 1A as opposed to one of those guys?
Yeah, it's tough, right? You always hear me say it, like whether it's not even health or just being a number one for the first time, like until you've done it, you haven't done it, right? And so, you know, here's another little blip. Now, again, it's tough because you don't know what triggered it.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just a save, like, those are going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I know, you know, like, if, you know, if we talked about off mic, like, the theories of sort of terms of how guys are built and sort of, you know, what tends towards durability. Like, I can find for every Jacob Markstrom who's, you know, big and strong and massive and has a tendency to stay healthy, I can find, you know, a Mackenzie Blackwood who's built like a linebacker and can't, right? And, you know, one of the most durable goalies, Luongo was one, yeah, right, with all kinds of physiological sort of challenges. You know, bow-legged is not the typical sort of physiological background for a large goaltender. Looking like he just got off a 6-hour cattle drive is not normally how we do it.
But he was Gumby, man. He was built like Gumby.
Yeah, and there's so many different, but like Devin Dubnyk.
Right.
Devin Dubnyk was the last guy to sort of, how many in a row did he play after the trade from Arizona, right? Like, so different bodies sort of can look different and I think have just as much injury prone or not injury prone. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure I fully buy into that. But like I said, until you've done it, you haven't done it. And so the questions will be there and, you know, fair or not, that's just the reality of it. You know, if this just is a save where you, listen, the way he plays beyond physiology, the way he plays, I've talked about the explosiveness almost to the point of violence. And that puts a lot of stress. Like, he's just so, like, it's just bam, trigger, 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 go fast, fast, fast.
Yeah.
Like, beat everything visually, beat everything physically, beat every pass. Man, that puts a lot of stress on the body, right? Like, a lot of stress on the body. And so, you know, you're going to have those moments where you are extended, where you do end up reaching or getting yourself in a position where it's just more than the body can handle. I don't know that, you know, it becomes a fair criticism, but it might just become a reality, you know, that, and especially at a time when we're seeing, like, he's only on pace for 61. That doesn't seem crazy. I think the thing that, if anyone needs to point to anything, it's how much they've played him sort of since the All-Star break. And we've heard guys talk about how hard, even talked about how hard this stretch really has been. I talked to a couple of guys at the morning skate that ahead of the Winnipeg game to get some support quotes for NHL.com about what this schedule has been like since the All-Star break. And obviously he was a part of the All-Star game and didn't get that as a pure break. And, you know, the dog days and how hard it is to stay at 100%. So if there is any criticism that might be fair, it's the workload since then. But when I look at 61 as a pace, like, that doesn't, you know, we're not talking about 70. It doesn't seem extreme to me.
Yeah, and even since the All-Star break, Woody, if you go look at the goalies, you know, I mean, he's first. Like, he's started the most games since the All-Star break, but there's a lot of guys, including a lot of guys on teams in similar circumstances, who are at least, like, close, like 12, 11. You know, it's not really outlier usage.
It's not, like, wickedly out of whack, right?
No,
like,
it's not
crazy time.
Yeah, I absolutely think it's not. I mean, Ottinger, 13. Vasilevsky, 13. Lukanen over in Buffalo is tied with him at 14. Like, we've seen Skinner, 12. Like, Saros, 12. Markstrom, 12. Like, the number one goalies play about this much. So it's hard for me to criticize them too, or backseat drive, when it's within the realm of what we should expect from other players in similar sort of, like, workloads.
Yeah, and I guess the one caveat would be, again, the conversations about just how demanding their schedule has been, all the travel that's been involved in it, and the fact that not all of those guys were at the All-Star game. Maybe some of those things might lead you to believe maybe he shouldn't be number one with a bullet. And yet at the same time, I'm totally with you, because all they had to do was get through Saturday.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was it.
Yeah.
It's all spread out. It's perfectly set up for lots of rest from here on out.
Yes.
And just, like,
painful.
It feels like, I feel like I'm just feeding, like, the neurosis of every Canucks fan ever by saying that, because that's it. They just had to get through there, and they didn't. And so there's a lot of people going, of course they didn't, because it's the Canucks. But, you know, there wouldn't have been a lot of eyebrows raised at his start totals or his numbers if you get through Saturday and you head down this stretch with the schedule they have, the amount of time they're going to be able to give them off. And, you know, that all bodes well in terms of managing ultimately who ends up coming up to fill in, and Casey's workload as well in these next few weeks.
What can you tell us about Tolopilo and Seelovs and how they've performed in the American League? Has Tolopilo been at a high enough level that there's any doubt in your mind about who the Canucks would call up next?
Well, he's been at a high enough level that he's started to gain traction and take over starts and get more starts and, you know, dig into the role that I think we all assumed Arturs would have this year. He's making a push, as somebody in the organization said to me recently, actually. That said, my hunch, and has nothing to do with the fact that Arturs is coming off a 6-0 shutout on the weekend, but my hunch would be, both based on pedigree and maybe even more so experience, that it will still be Seelovs that comes up here. Because what Tolopilo is doing is quite remarkable for a first-year pro in North America, right? And this is the sort of everything that got cited when they signed him, was sort of that learning curve and how quickly he's gone from a really raw prospect to, you know, a guy that had 4 or 5 teams chasing him. So he's taken huge strides. That's great. I don't know that you want to throw him into this situation, whereas Arturs is already, like, the most impressive thing to me about the way Arturs played last year was how quickly he bounced back, got comfortable and adjusted after a, you know, pretty mid, as the kids would say, debut against the Rangers. right? Like, there were moments there, but it wasn't great. And as he played more, he just got better. Like, that's a positive. Again, much like Tolopilo this season in Abbotsford, sort of learning as you go and being able to process the pace and adjust to it. Now, the one thing about Arturs that sort of gets him into trouble, and I remember having this conversation with Curtis Sanford before, and it sort of continues. I thought he took huge strides with it last year, but it's kind of popped its head up again this year, is just trying too hard. Goaltending's like golf, man. Like, you can't just walk up to the first tee and swing out of your butt. It doesn't work. Like, you can't try harder. You can work harder in practice, but once the game's on, you have to be able to sort of let it come to you as a goaltender. And there are times when he just gets a little too anxious, might be the word, but again, that conveys it's mental. I know I've used this before with you guys. James Reimer uses it all the time, and it's just, he's just too horny. You're just like, gotta go, like, let's go. And goes into save execution mode and just doesn't, a little bit more patience, a little bit let the game come to him. And I thought he took huge strides with that last year. It kind of is biting him a little bit early this year, and that'll be his big challenge if it is indeed him and he gets some starts, is to, you know, not go into, because he's got all the physical tools to make the spectacular. But he just needs to have a little more patience and make the game a little easier on himself and go into goalie 9-1-1 later in sequences, especially the way this team defends now. You know, they don't need it. They don't need spectacular as often. Interesting, though, they gave up 5 high danger against Winnipeg the other night. Like, as lopsided as that thing was, up until the second goal, Hellebuck had made a bunch of saves. And if Demko hadn't made some tough ones, including the Appleton one, which was, again, bang, bang, low, high stress on the body save that leads to the 2-on-1 rush the other way for Bluger and DiGiuseppe, like, there were actually some really tough saves in there. The Namestnikov save, Scheifele getting behind the defense off the wing and cutting alone in front early in the second period. Like, there were only 5 high dangers in the game. They all occurred with Thatcher Demko was in net, so they put him under some duress a little bit, but it's certainly not the tire fire that they were defensively last season, and so Arturs coming up, it means that patience I talk about is even more important. You can't, you know, you can't take yourself out of position, because this isn't a team that forces you to go east-west the way they used to as a goaltender.
Swinging out your butt and getting a little too horny. We were calling the Demko injury situation Groinwatch 2024 before you came on the air. You couldn't have known that, but thanks for getting it with the spirit of the program, Woody.
You know me, I'm always about the themes, even if I didn't know what the theme was.
It worked out perfectly. I do want to, so, you know, great intel on Seelovs and Tolopilo and who might come up here. Looking a little bit forward, even going into next year, you know, Drance and I were talking earlier in the show, with Demko's injury history now, do the Canucks need to be a little bit more mindful of how they invest in the backup position going forward? And does that make it a little more difficult to maybe, you know, bring along, like, promote Archer, Seelovs, or Tolopilo or somebody into that position with the concerns that might reasonably exist now about, okay, well, is Demko going to be injured at some point during the course of the year? What do you think about how this team should approach the backup goaltending position going forward?
I'm going to put you on the spot by answering a question with a question.
All right.
Because top of my head, I don't have it in front of me. Does Arturs require waivers next year?
That's a great question.
He does.
We talk about patience. Do you know Drance off the top of your head?
I'll look it up, but off the top of my head, I believe he does.
Yeah, so like that probably answers your question right there. Although
he's going to be arbitration eligible, even a year
early in
the
season, you can get guys down.
Remaining,
you can take that risk.
Sorry, he won't require waivers until 2025, 2026, unless he plays 75 more NHL games.
Which,
so
right.
I think you're okay. So he'll be waivers exempt again next season.
Yeah, so like there is a theory that, you know, as long as you have time, you use it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wonder where his patience level would be in terms of, you know, and you don't want to lose him motivationally either if he feels like he's ready. But yeah, like, your perfect scenario, and I've always said this, it's very hard to maintain it, but your perfect scenario is having a stud number one, a guy who's capable of playing every 2 weeks as the backup role, but then a potential future stud in the minor. So a guy who, like, if you need a goalie once every 2 weeks, you have him sitting on the bench and he's comfortable, because that's a really tough job.
Mm.
Like, what Casey DeSmith does, especially since the starts have sort of dissipated here, that's a really tough job. It's not easy to do. And a lot of young goalies struggle with it. Connor Ingram, who's on a tear now, obviously, in Arizona. Now, their season's cratered, but he's still, what, leads the league in shutouts. He's had a really good season. He's become a really good goaltender. He struggled last year because at the beginning of the year, he was the backup, and he didn't know how to do the job anymore. He went to Corey Schwab. He told us, I had to go to Corey Schwab. I'm like, how do I do this job? How do I not play and just go in once every 2 weeks? They had to come up with a plan. It's not an easy thing. And so you don't want necessarily a young up-and-coming goaltender to be stuck in that role. So your perfect scenario is to have that kid in the minors, but have him, so if you need somebody every 2 weeks, you got him. But then if you need somebody for two straight weeks, like we're looking at now, maybe they have a chance to come in and steal more minutes in that role. And so we'll see how it plays out. But usually, if you have time, use it. And if Arturs doesn't require waivers as much as he might not want to hear this, you know, maybe that's something that where they just continue the status quo and bring in another veteran goaltender with NHL experience. I mean, it's funny because Casey's numbers obviously got cratered by the Minnesota game. And you can't, when you only play every once in a while, you can't recover from that. But let's not forget, like, there was a point this season where people were like, oh, they need to start him more. When he was playing regularly, especially that trip, I think it was through Ottawa, part of that road trip, he played some really good minutes for them. They played really well in front of him for large parts of the season, Minnesota game being the exception. And he's given them, I told you, I think I used this stat with you guys, he's only given up two low percentage goals the entire season. For anybody who's faced as many shots as he has, that's the best in the NHL. Like, he's not giving up bad goals. What more do you want from a guy who only plays every 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's a fair question. It's a fair question. And look, he's going to get a run here. As you said, though, the team's playing so well defensively in front of him that I don't think it should be a doomsday scenario for Casey DeSmith to get a run of starts for the next little bit. Woodley, really appreciate it. That was fantastic. I knew you'd bring the goods today, as you always do. Thanks for doing this with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I apologize that I didn't have actual any goods in terms of real updates.
No, man.
Intel. But hopefully that helped people ease the minds of Vancouver Canucks fans.
Well, that might be too high a bar. That's hard to do.
Ease the minds of Canucks fans. That's not what we're here to do. This is Canucks talk.
The bridge.
You're thinking of Canucks Central.
Right, we'll talk soon, Kevin. Thank you.
All the best, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George and White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
When I make a joke and you're not comfortable with it, that's my favorite. That's the sweet spot.
It's not that I'm not comfortable. You can rip Canuck Central. I just got to get Woodley off the air. I don't need Woodley on air for it. Whew. Take all the shots you want, man. I don't care. Since they ripped off the whiteboard.
Yeah, it's done with love.
Canuck Central is on my enemies list now.
It's done with love for Sat and a genuine sense of acrimony toward dastardly Dan Riccio.
No, you were just shouting out Sat's reporting earlier in the show.
That's true.
Okay, we'll take a break. Final segment.
Not that he needs
up.
Me to shout out his reporting. It's just that was really good report.
All right. It was.
Yeah.
He does good work. That's why we put him to work 24/7 here at the station. Never a moment's rest for our guy Sat. We will take a break. Final segment coming up here. Maybe we'll talk Thatcher Demko. Probably. We'll talk about some other stuff, too.
Which Charles Dickens character is Satyar Shah? Okay, sorry. Just go to break.
Yeah, I'll go to break now. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up here. Sportsnet 650.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Get your text in to the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this one came in while we were having our chat with Kevin Woodley, which was fantastic, by the way. Again, no surprise there. Great analysis on the Thatcher Demko situation from Kevin Woodley. This text says, unsigned, questioning whether Demko can be a workhorse is odd considering all the conversation that no goalies should be anymore. Just an observation. And I think that's part of this, right? Is that, yes, there may be additional evidence that Thatcher Demko, you know, is not going to be that workhorse 60 games a year guy.
It's hard.
But in general, yeah, you probably shouldn't be building your team around that anymore, right? Unless you have a unicorn, unless one falls into your lap, like a Hellebuck, like a Vasilevskiy. But again, even then, right? We've seen hiccups for some of those guys. Shesterkin. We've seen that it can go wrong even when you think you have one of those guys. So I think it's fair to look at this and say, and again, I want to be very clear. I don't think anybody who's saying Thatcher Demko might not be that guy, that it's like a fatal flaw for the Canucks or anything. It's like, oh, and therefore they have to move on from Demko, or therefore they can't win a Stanley Cup. I don't think that's the case at all. All it does is just influence what you have to do around him, how you have to build your team. And, you know, step one, I think, is build a really good defensive team in front of him, right? Build an environment where you are not extraordinarily reliant on your goalie.
Good news.
They've done it. Right? But, like, because you start to think about, okay, how are they going to handle this next year? And really, the defensive identity of this team has changed, as I was laying out earlier in the show, even from the first half of the season to the second half of the season. They went from a, you know, above average defensive team in October, November, December to an elite defensive team in the new year. If you have that baseline, if you're able to sustain that, and look, that's a very open question. This is not a team with a track record of being elite defensively year in, year out. Obviously, to say the least, they're going to have a lot of turnover potentially. We'll see where it goes. But if you can establish that as a baseline, I mean, look how many games Carolina is able to win with, you know, question marks at goalie all the time, right? Like, you, once you get to that point, it gives you such a cushion with how you approach goaltending scenario. And I think for the Canucks, probably what it comes down to is you just have to commit to, we're getting Thatcher Demko between 50 and 55 games, right? And we're going to rely, we know our defensive game and our structure is good enough to make sure that we're solidly in the playoff mix with 50 to 55 games of Thatcher Demko, right? Like, that, I think, should probably be the goal for what you're trying to build here for next year and beyond.
I'd go even more extreme than that, but that's just,
of course you would.
Yeah, that's just my view of goalie usage. I mean, you think about,
so what 45?
Yeah, I'd target a even split. Wow. And then obviously you have some flexibility to adjust as you go through. But I think if you're trying to win a Stanley Cup, you want a goalie playing games 60 through 65 in June, not in the first, you know, month of the playoffs, not in the first week of the playoffs. You know, I think that was a big advantage for, like, Bobrovsky only played 50,
mm-hmm,
and then got hot in the playoffs, right? Aiden Hill played 33,
yeah,
got hot in the playoffs. You know, meanwhile, UC Saros played 64 and got hurt at the tail end of the year. Connor Hellebuck played 64 and got outdueled by Aiden Hill and Laurent Brossoit in the first round. Georgiev played 62 and got outdueled by Philip Grubauer in the first round. Jake Oettinger played 62, and by the time he got to the conference final, Aiden Hill was like a huge edge,
yep,
for Vegas, despite what we would have thought based on how it looked on paper. Ilya Sorokin lost in the first round. Andrei Vasilevskiy got outplayed by Samsonov in the first round. Those are your guys over 60 games. Like, I don't know. It's nice to have the 60-game guy, but I think it takes a true freak, a true Vasilevskiy-style robot to, you know, play 60 and then be at their absolute, like, be peaking at the right time between games 70 and 80. And, you know, I remember doing a lot of analytical work on Luongo back in my, you know, early 20s. And what happened with Lou was, once he got over 70, 75 games played in a season, the baseline performance fell out, right? Like, you'd either get dominance or he was barely startable, right? And doesn't that match your experience of, like, shutout, blowout in the 2011 Stanley Cup final?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what I worry about is, do you lose that baseline where it's like a goalie's good enough to give you, like, you know, just one of those games where you have to win it, but your goalie's not going to lose it for you at that time of year. I think freshness matters a ton. And I think we see it every single season now. Like, these guys who play 60 plus don't go into the playoffs with they're at their peak.
Peter in Surrey texts in, I will respectfully disagree on goalies. The goalies used to play so many games. I don't think 55 or 60 games is outrageous for a goalie to play. That's why you pay him as a number one goalie. I think that it is an easy and attainable goal. This is probably just bad luck. That's from Peter in Surrey. But I think, to the point about, first of all,
it might be.
Well, yeah, okay.
That's fair.
There's two separate conversations, though, right? Like, one is, did the usage lead to injury? But then that's actually separate from keeping a guy fresh for the playoffs.
For sure.
Right? You know what I mean? Because you could go the whole season uninjured, but still run out of gas in the playoffs.
Totally.
So that's actually, there's two different things going on there. But to the point about, well, hey, that you're paying him like a number one goalie. Well, kind of. You're paying him like a number one, but not a superstar, not an all-star.
He's like
number one goalie.
20th highest cap hit, tied for the 20th highest cap hit in the NHL among starting goaltenders. So it's like you're paying him like a low-end
starter.
It's
not like you went out and got a guy in free agency for $8 million, 8.5, and now you're like, wait a second, he can't play 65 games.
No.
Like, you got him at a relative bargain compared to a lot of other elite goalies in the league. So again, you have that extra flexibility. And, you know, to the point of what goalies used to do, and this is something that Woodley would be a way better to address. But first of all, as you said, even guys like Luongo, who's like one of the all-time workhorses, started to fall off in the playoffs sometimes, right? Because of the load they were carrying. But second of all, I think there's more demands placed on goalies a lot of times with the style that they're playing now.
Also, look at the hip issues Luongo dealt with late in his career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like cruel to his body. You know what I'm saying? Like, truly, like, it wasn't something. Luongo's usage isn't of the sort that athletes should go through.
By the way, shout out to this texter who simultaneously made both of our points, like, before we could even finish them. He texts in, the game is faster and more east-west than it was even 10 years ago. The goalies have to be athletic freaks now. Yeah, Luongo played a ton of games, and look what it's done to his hips.
Yeah.
So that texter's on the money right there.
100%. No, and I think the changes in the game are super relevant here. And the changes to the goalie position, like Martin Brodeur got in the butterfly like a couple times a game.
Yeah.
You know, like some of these goalies were stand up goalies. That was like a style stand up style goalie. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Somebody, guys, I'm bringing it back.
Like Mike Richter.
I think Patrick Roy had the wrong idea. Actually, I'm bringing back the stand up style.
I mean, you know, the closest we've seen is like Ryan Miller, right? Ryan Miller, Thomas Greiss. There's a few guys who play a little bit more of an unstructured game and feel the game. But for the most part, you know, this is like a martial art at this point. It's like a martial art played on skates facing 100-mile-per-hour shots with, you know, a vulcanized rubber puck and composite sticks and, you know, having to get down and into demanding poses at rapid speed, you know, 80 times a game, because you're working on every shot attempt, whether or not it ends up being a shot on goal or not. So 70 plus times a game, you know, it's an absurd demand. It's an absurd athletic demand.
And I thought it was really interesting when we had Woodley on, you know, him highlighting not just that he thought it might have been that save on Nemestikov that tweaked something for Demko, but the specific reasons why it might have led to something, mm-hmm. and the fact that it is kind of inherently those high danger chances and those, you know, that one was more north-south because it was from below the goal line to the slot, but east-west or chances like that from behind the net into the slot that put so much stress on the body, right? And on the, as you said, the kind of physical demands of what the goalie is expected to do, it's just a lot. And it's different than it was, you know, as Rager texted in even 10 years ago. So you can say like, oh, hey, goalie, what do they expect? Well, only half the games. But at a certain point, you just kind of have to be aware of what the trends are, where things are going. And you got to plan to get the best out of your guys. Trey, the Gulf Island ferry worker, says, obvious caveat that player injuries are not good. Could the Demko injury solve the Canucks from themselves overplaying Demko down the stretch? That's from Trey, the Gulf Island ferry worker. I mean, he's not going to get to 60.
No.
Barring some very, very unexpected announcement. They only have 16 games left, right? A month would have him miss 11 of those. And then, you know, you'd think he wouldn't play all five after he came back from that anyways. So he's probably going to end up like somewhere between 50 and 55. Now, this isn't how you would draw it up. You would like to get there as a result of an intentional plan rather than an injury in his 49th appearance of the year. But I don't think it's unreasonable to, if you're looking for the silver lining out there, I don't think Trey, the Gulf Island ferry worker, is being unreasonable. Maybe he will be rested, refreshed. As Woodley said, it's not like you need necessarily a ton of runway for a goalie to get back up to peak form. So, hey, depending on what the injury is, depending on how it compromises his movement, you never know. He could be back in form by the time he gets back, or back, you know, rested and ready by the time he gets back.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best case scenario, right? Negatives don't necessarily have to be negatives, just as positives, right? Canucks at home for a full month, you know, with lots of rest in between. Like that's, yes, that seems favorable, and it can be, but there's also the risk of gathering rust, right? I mean, all positives can be negatives, all negatives can be positives, depending on how exactly it plays out and how it's managed. But I'm certainly sensitive to the possibility that, you know, maybe this is minor, and maybe a 2 to 3 week off, 2 to 3 weeks off for Demko leaves you in a good spot for him to be at his absolute peak come playoff time. That would be fantastic. That's certainly what you hope for.
That's certainly what you hope for.
Well, especially because, you know, Canucks had that losing streak, right? And I would say, while we pointed to their offense, you know, and it was like, okay, this is sort of the regression element kicking in a little bit here. I don't think we were ever concerned, right, when they were like losing those games.
I never thought for a moment, oh, they're going to get swept in the first round, or oh, they're not going to win a round, or anything like that. Like, oh, yeah. I never downgraded.
I mean, that could still happen.
Of course, but I never downgraded my chances of like them competing in the playoffs. No.
In fact, like, I remember that Minnesota game, and we talking about it the Monday after it happened, and it was like, that's just one of those weird games, because even as the goals started going in against them, right? Like, I thought the 5 minutes after they lost that lead in Minnesota on the power play until Marco Rossi kicked a puck into the net was like maybe some of the best.
They turned it on.
They were dominant. Dominant. I was like so impressed. And then the Colorado game, like they played well, you know, on and on. And I think this week the results kind of caught up to a process that we've kind of seen from this team since, like, honestly, since they got back from the All-Star break. Like, the results haven't always been there since the All-Star break, but I think this team's form has. And and I think this team's form's at a level where their baseline, like, structural play is so much higher than it was even earlier in the season, right? Like, that game against the Kings, you know, I still think the Kings, like, imposed their will on that game, but I don't even know that the Canucks could have hung in that style of game in November.
Like, yeah.
I think they've taken such a massive improvement this week. And I think one of the other sort of cruel ironies of the Demko ailment, right, is like this week where the results caught up to what's been phenomenal process from this team for the last 6-8 weeks. Really did sort of feel to me like, oh boy, like this is a why not us week. This is a week that really cements that this team has kind of the bona fides to maybe.
Isn't it fascinating with the stand pat deadline happening right in the middle there as well? You know what I mean? Like, that's a really fascinating part of this. And I was thinking that after that performance on Saturday. Like, I'm not drawing a direct connection between the two.
I was thinking of it after Vegas. I almost wrote that column. Like, do they need to do anything?
But Patrick Alvin must have been feeling pretty good, right? You know, hey, I just decided not to pay up for these prices. And, you know, we broke this down a little bit on Friday, so we won't go too much into the trade deadline here. But as I said earlier in the show, if you're getting those consistent defensive results, you're in with a shot. As you said, why not us? Like, you're in the realm where it's not ridiculous. It's not irrational to be talking about a long Stanley Cup run, going for the Stanley Cup. And I think that's what you're getting at, right? The results have been there where they're perfectly legitimately in that conversation. Now, again, now it all comes with the caveat of what's going on with Thatcher Demko, because this is still a team that needs that extra level that Thatcher Demko can provide. And hopefully it doesn't all come crashing down, because that's like, it's not as if this is a smoke and mirrors Demko run, right? That would be disappointing in its own right. And then you lose Demko. It's that this is a legitimate contender with Thatcher Demko, and you hope that it doesn't cost them a chance to show that they're legitimate Stanley Cup contenders.
For sure. For sure. It just felt this week like as the bounces normalized, right? And especially interestingly enough, the bounces going against them, right? Like, it felt like there was just this stretch of games where every single mistake this team made, and they don't make a lot of them, but every time they made a mistake, it was in the back of their net, and that stopped this week. Partly because Demko was on a heater, though, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the Casey DeSmith question becomes relevant again, right? Like, one thing DeSmith's done really well is he doesn't get beat on the shots he shouldn't get beat
by bad goals.
Yeah. So you're not going to get the deflating bad angle ones, or at least you haven't over the course of the season. Two non-dangerous chance goals against DeSmith all year. But do you get that save off Turcotte? Right? Do you get some of those saves against Winnipeg that allow you to keep building that lead? That's sort of an impossible standard, right? Given that we know, like, I think DeSmith's a good player, but he's not Demko. We know that,
no,
right?
Of course not.
And that's an unreasonable thing to ask him to be. But without that edge, right, the Canucks are looking at a sort of different set of dynamics than we're used to.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And that's, again, when the power play will come back into focus, the penalty kill, you know, all of those other factors beyond just the 5-on-5 defensive performance. By the way, just to get a little bit more trade deadline reaction and fallout in, Vegas made the Tomáš Hertl deal right towards the end of our coverage on Friday, which I still just kind of can't get over. It was just so out of nowhere how that one went down. I saw today that their GM, Kelly McCrimmon, was on the Jeff Merrick show, like, insisting that all these guys are super injured and really defending his use of LTIR. But it is so fascinating because we were watched that Vegas game, and that was even with Noah Hanifin in the lineup, right? And I was like, man, I just don't know if this team is ever going to do anything. Now you look at it, and they bring in Tomáš Hertl, who's injured himself, but will be back for the playoffs. They made the Hanifin addition. They're getting Mark Stone back. They got a couple results their way on the weekend, so all of a sudden the talk of, oh man, they might not even make the playoffs. Not that it's done and dusted, but they helped themselves over the weekend. Like, where do you stand on Vegas now, given what they did at the trade deadline? And just kind of, I have even less of an idea about how to handicap what they're going to be and how they would match up against the Canucks now.
Well, I kind of wonder, like, in the wake of the Hertl trade, one thing that occurred to me was, do you remember how their first season went after they acquired Jack Eichel? They missed the playoffs.
Yeah, they missed the playoffs. Right. I don't think they're going to miss, though. Like, they won, Seattle lost on the weekend. You know what I mean?
They're not like, hey, we got to, can we dap up John Hines, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
That was so cool.
For pulling the goalie in overtime.
That was so awesome. Anyway, sorry. What were we talking about?
Vegas.
So I wonder if, like, I think Tomáš Hertl is awesome. Awesome. Big, big fan. That contract was wild.
Yes, it was.
When the San Jose Sharks signed it made no sense. And they paid the price, right? I mean, within 18 months, they got way less for the player than they would have if they'd traded him as a rental.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Shocker. Good illustration of my guy's trade value's lowest right after they signed an extension concept. Now, I think Hurdle's going to be sick there. Like, the ability to go, especially because they have some question marks, whether it's Marchessault, whether it's Chandler Stephenson. But the ability for that team in future years to go Eichel, Hurdle down the middle, or even together, because Hertl can play on the wing and be a monster with his size. I mean, that's as big and as skilled as it gets down the middle, especially when you throw William Karlsson in behind it. Just like,
you want to load up and go Hertl, Eichel, Stone on a line together?
I'm interested, especially because they have Nick Waugh.
That'd be pretty good.
a bunch of center depth to sort of layer in underneath. But it took a bit of time for the Eichel thing to work. Like, it wasn't an instantaneous success, and I sort of wonder, especially because he's not going to get back into the lineup for a bit yet. He was acquired as a hurt player. I do sort of wonder if, like, do they get max benefit from that trade this year? You know, that's sort of my question there. Like, is that one that matters more next season as opposed to this year? I also think we need to begin to note that Vegas is, like, taking the Bruins' strategy of making long-term moves at the deadline and amped it up, right? I mean, they're like the most extreme version now of the deadline's not a time to buy rentals. The deadline is a time to buy long-term pieces. That's what they're in the business of doing, and it's a fascinating dynamic.
And I have, again, absolutely no idea what they're going to look like come playoff time, what their performance is going to be, but a very, very possible first-round opponent for the Canucks at this point.
The most volatile team in hockey, without question.
Well, that'll wrap it up for us today. The Canucks are on the ice practicing tomorrow, so we'll see if we get any additional detail on Thatcher Demko. Of course, the team plays next on Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.